What's up, Nicole?
Hey, Rolando. What's good?
So, question. When you think of video game movies, what are some of the first that come to mind?
Super Mario Brothers, 1993. I think is the year it came out.
One of the worst movies of all time. I know.
Koopas and what's his name as Mario?
Bob Hoskins.
Just the worst, best casting ever.
I have such a crush on Luigi.
Oh, John Leguizamo.
Yeah. That shirtless scene.
Are we talking about Super Mario Brothers?
Well, unfortunately, we're not talking about Super Mario Brothers. We're actually talking with a better received game movie. Mm. And there's not that many to choose from. Do you know any idea what we might be talking about?
I don't know anything about video games.
No, we're going to be talking about Tomb Raider.
What are we going to be talking about, the game or the movie?
We'll talk a little bit about the game, but we're going to be focusing on the two movies. Okay. So, with that said, I'm Rolando.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals, an original podcast
about unoriginality.
Let's go. Nicole, we're here joined again by our producers, Eddie Z and Josh.
Hey guys.
What's up, guys?
I have a mic.
I forgot
to bring the mic.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was going to say, again with no mic.
We're an early podcast. We can't afford all the equipment
yet. He'll get his mic for the news. Don't worry. So how was your day?
Oh, actually, last night I moved my Nintendo 64 into my room. So now I can like lay down and play Mario Party.
My favorite game.
Is it your favorite Mario?
Mario Party is undoubtedly one of my... It's like Super Smash Bros. Is probably number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mario Party.
I'm like just a fan of Mario games. So I have like Mario Kart.
I even love
Mario Golf. Okay. I'm like so into Mario that it taught me how to play golf.
So weird.
Yeah. It was a little weird.
Interesting segue talking about Mario, because today we'll be talking about video games.
Will we?
Movie adaptations as a result.
Okay.
So, you know, today we'll be talking about Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny, right? Because I'm going to want to give you a little bit of history lesson here.
Yeah. Normally I'm like the one who's like, let me tell you about this. And I can't tell you a single thing about any of this.
I know a little bit about the video game history of Tomb Raider because I played at least the original Tomb Raider. And I actually, you know, I play video games every now and then. I wouldn't call myself a gamer. That's gamer, GAYMER. Or gamer in the regular sense.
I love that.
That's a subculture in the gay community. Gamers.
Gamers. Oh. Yeah.
I am not that. The original Tomb Raider came out in 1996. It came out for the PC, PlayStation, and Sega Saturn. By the time Lara Croft Tomb Raider 3 came out, it would become like the flagship game for PlayStation and a PlayStation exclusive. So usually when people think about PlayStations, they usually think about Tomb Raider, and I think Crash Bandicoot would be the other one, maybe Spyro the Dragon, but those were those games. The game focused on Lara Croft. She was an established archaeologist who in the first game was hired by a corporation to find this thing called the Scion, which they were going to use to raise a demon or like a god or something that was creating mutants. And she had to, you know, fight this evil organization and then try to, you know, put an end to like this resurrection. And interestingly enough, the first game itself didn't have a lot of science fiction or fantasy elements until like the later half of the game. A lot of the rest of the series would later embrace more of that stuff. But in the original game, like your main obstacles were like, wolves, bears, and dinosaurs for some reason in these tombs that were alive. Then it became like mutants that were mutated by like that demon person thing. I think when you think of like Tomb Raider, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was most iconic about her was her really...
Tight shorts,
her tank top, and just her tits bouncing everywhere, right? That was just what she was known for. And I remember my friend swore up and down that there was like a code so you could play her naked. And it was known as Nude Raider. So I've come to learn that like that was actually a thing. It was only for the PC versions, not for like the PlayStation or the Sega Saturn. So if you had the PC version, you could have put a patch on your computer so that way you could play Lara Croft as naked. And I never understood the appeal, right? Like I've never understood this thing about masturbating to like game characters or even cartoon characters,
yeah.
Right? It's a thing. It's out there. People do this.
That's so disgusting.
Ever been to a porn site? Like sometimes they have like animated like Family Guy characters.
It's
like in commercials. It's just like, oh, people pay for this. Yeah. So yeah, so the game actually focused a lot on, it wasn't so much about the gunfighting. Actually, the big focus on the game was really puzzle solving. So that's why I like the game a lot, because I tend to like a lot of like puzzle solving games. Like Legend of Zelda is like notoriously puzzle solving game. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the game itself was rebooted in 2013, in which the company decided to like rebrand the character. They made her younger, and instead of hunting tombs, she was trying to prevent a cult from raising a demon from a tomb. And that it was like her first adventure. Huh. Right, because it would be the inspiration for the movie.
Oh, okay, well, let's not jump ahead.
Well, we are jumping ahead, but yeah. So that's a little brief history about the video game series.
When Lara Croft Tomb Raider in 2001 came out, this was still like off the height of like the hype of the Lara Croft Tomb Raider release.
Right. I think by 2001, there was probably like maybe three games out to market already. Maybe
so she was
four.
Still like on the top of the video game charts and everything.
I mean, the original Tomb Raider was just so, it was such a well received game.
Yeah.
It's like,
it was like about time. Yeah. Okay. And 2001 was actually a really, it was not the Space Odyssey that was predicted, but it was an adventurous film year. That's when Lord of the Rings came out, the first one, the first Harry Potter came out. And of course, who could forget Lara Croft Tomb Raider?
Who could forget? I forgot about it.
Yeah, I forgot about it too. But I remember actually it was the first movie that I saw like three or four times in theaters because I had a major lesbian crush on Angelina Jolie.
Really?
And she was my first lesbian crush.
Three times? So you saw Lara Croft Tomb Raider three times?
In the movie theater, yes.
Man. So, all right. So what did that do to your brain watching this movie three times?
It really instills what a gorgeous woman looks like and just like provides standards for the future.
What is it that attracted you to this version of Angelina Jolie, right? Because I feel like as an actress, she's gone through so many iterations and evolutions.
This is
crazy Angelina, right? This is like,
yeah, there was something very wild and unhinged about her, and she was just such a rebel. She had tattoos, she liked to lick blood, and she was just like, if you were an outcast, I was very much an outcast growing up. I couldn't relate to things that my sisters were into, and she was very much like something I discovered on my own, and I was like, oh my gosh, something about this resonates with me. She's different, she's wild, and she's fucking hot as hell.
And that was this.
And this was when I was 13.
So this is pre-Oscar win or post-Oscar?
This was right after the Oscar.
So this is
win.
Right after. So she won the Oscar and then she was Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
She won the Oscar. She made out with her brother and she got Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Oh my gosh, she made out with her brother. That was the VMAs.
No, that was the Oscars.
Was it the Oscars or was it the VMAs?
No, it was at the Oscars.
Gross. No class.
It was not like on camera,
that's
but like during
do,
that night.
That's something you could do on the VMAs, not at the Oscars.
No. And that's true. The Oscars is just bad taste.
As someone who's seen the movie three times, what were your initial thoughts on the film?
So when I watched it again for the podcast to like refamiliarize myself, I had remembered so much of the film, but like watching it back with like a screenwriter, film editor perspective, film critic, I was just like, wow, this is just does not hold up as a good film at all. Mm-hmm. It's not very well written. It's just like so like boxy. It's just like it hits all the marks, but it doesn't properly or emotionally hit any mark.
Interesting you should say boxy, because the thing I remember from the Tomb Raider game series is her boxy boobs. So it was just like two cubes on her chest, like just walking around.
Is that what you remember?
That's what I remember. Like,
see, even that made an impact on you as a gay man, as a gamer.
So let's talk a little bit about Angelina Jolie's version of Lara Croft, right?
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie is Lara Croft.
This is where I start to have fun.
Tomb Raider.
This Lara Croft, she's established. She
privileged white girl.
Privileged white girl
lives
who
in
fights,
a mansion.
Lives in a mansion.
Doesn't establish how anything is given to her, but we find out her father's dead.
Yeah, and he was an archaeologist, and that's who she takes after. She's also like a bad girl, walking around naked at her house and like taunting her.
Her has butler. Men work for her, and she just likes to flaunt her femininity in front of them.
Yeah. As one does when you have money.
Yeah. She's one note. She's just sassy. She has no other dimension to her other than when she's thinking about her father. She's very weepy.
Right.
But other than that, she's just like, yes, a lady should be modest.
Yes, a lady should be modest.
And she also has a very, very tame, weak British accent.
I think one of the interesting things about her was also she was kind of written I mean, we spoke about this, right? Like, yeah. She was written to be kind of like an Indiana Jones type character, right?
Yes.
And, I mean, does anything come to mind when you think about Indiana Jones and Lara Croft? I mean, in terms of character development, they're not really similar at all.
No, not at all.
You know, like,
yeah.
One's hot, one's not.
Yeah, one actually had a better established backstory and, like, humanity poisoned him and all this stuff. And the other
I think she had the better developed backstory.
You think she had the better backstory?
Of course not. She totally did it.
There's this one scene, like, later on in the movie where she pretty much does an ode to Raiders of the Lost Ark, where, like, this thing is, like, coming at her, and she just takes her gun and she shoots it, and she's like, all right, what else is happening?
Right.
You know, but, like, mind you, it like, doesn't deliver like, that
rock
well.
Rock monsters everywhere just, like, devouring people.
Yeah.
And stuff.
I think that she doesn't really hold a candle to Indiana Jones other than, like, you know, the movie references, but that's about it. I think as a character, she's so underdeveloped, so not even developed, mm-hmm. and just so, yeah, one note and flat,
yeah.
which is not, like, her. Yeah. Like, no, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
But
I think one of the flat. So for me, one of the things that stands out in this movie is how over the top and how much spectacle there was in this film.
Mm-hmm.
The very first scene in the movie, she's fighting a robot. And then we've come to find out that this is a training simulation in her own house, in like a room, no less.
Yeah.
And
privileged.
Then what else? I think the other fight scene that comes to mind is like when she's just hanging out in a bungee in her foyer for some reason. And next thing you know, like some army men come through her moonlit ceiling and stuff, and like
yeah,
there's a big overly drawn out fight sequence between her and like these henchmen. Mm-hmm. They're trying to steal this clock that she found in
yes.
her.
Yes, kudos to Angelina Jolie. She did a lot of her own stunts.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, good. People don't really know that. And mm-hmm. if you really look, she did a lot of her own stunts, and that's really cool to see like a woman kick so much ass. And if you really look closely, she actually never really directly harms anyone nor kills anyone. So that's also kind of like nice that she's just like out there having fun. But like, that's true.
Did
she really look closely? Rolando's looking at me like, are you sure about that?
Didn't she kill the bad guy?
No.
Spoiler alert.
No.
She like controlled the knife to like stab him.
Yeah, but she also just left it there.
Ah, that's like, what's it called? That's like someone saying, it's like, I didn't kill him. The gun killed him.
Well, that's a whole different argument that I would love to have one day. But yeah, so she's just also like, how did she get, like, did she train herself? Did her father train her? Like, how did she become, how does everyone know who she is?
Right.
I thought she was just some girl who lived all alone in a mansion. You know, so like nothing is really properly established or provided for you. Sometimes I like that actually when it's like, in some ways it's an exposition-free movie, but then like the whole time they're just like providing you exposition for things that don't make any sense. Like this Illuminati thing that they're trying to
squeeze in,
all
yeah.
find right. the... I don't know, some sort of solar...
It was like a triangle.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, two...
The Triangle of Zintha. That's a South Park reference.
So with that said, right, there's no backstory really given to any of these characters and stuff. Do you think that was because the movie was really intended to the fans of the video game series? Or was it really
but even
trying to appeal to
like,
mass audience?
Even if, you know, you could do anything like Harry Potter and The Lord of the Rings, they were all like for the fans of it, but like it still well established the world and the characters and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And like... You can't say, well, because they were based on books or anything, because I think video games take a really good time establishing a story.
I don't remember Lara Croft establishing much of a story, to be honest. Like the video in the video game itself, like she's just established as like a big game hunter
did any of the video games prior to the film have a story within it, and was anything that was in the film established in the video game?
No. So the movie itself really didn't follow anything from the video games.
Okay,
it
so
like
it made
own
up its own.
Plot. Yeah.
So like, you don't know anything about her dad in the video games. You don't know anything about the people she lives.
We know that her dad is missing, but like, they don't even really expand upon that in the video games.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not a fleshed out story in the video game either. So
right.
Then they were just kind of like making it up as
really,
they went
that might
in
be
the movie.
Lara Croft's thing, right? Like, it just could be that mystery. It's just like her.
But then, like, it doesn't
missing.
Make sense. I mean, like, I guess. Well, then, Super Mario is the same way. Like, why make a movie out of something that doesn't really even have a story to it? But then again, Hollywood will make a movie out of anything. The Emoji Movie exists.
So that's true.
But let's talk about the plot of the film then, or the lack thereof. The plot.
Mm-hmm.
Something's happening in like a week that only happens every 5,000 years.
Yeah.
And the father doesn't want her to do it, but she's doing it.
So this is 2001, right? So I guess we had an obsession with like the new millennium and planets aligning was a common trope in movies for some reason this era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of like Hercules, right? Like that was one of the major plot points. It was like the planets are aligning.
Oh, was
Even
it?
Even though it was in Greek times, but you know.
Yeah.
it was similar. You know, that's like the main plot point that
yeah.
the planets are aligning. So that's what's happening in this film. And she found a clock that was hidden in her father's stuff, I think by his grave or something.
Something, yeah. Right? She just like stumbles upon it.
Yeah.
And she's like, my father would have loved to have seen this.
And it's just like, it's a clock that's ticking backwards. So it's counting down to something. And she comes to discover that the Illuminati are after it because they need to find these three stone pieces so that way they can get the powers of a god. If I remember
the triangle of Zinthar, which I'm just going to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it grants you like the power of a god, right? So you can like turn back time. You can control matter.
Yeah.
Control. It was basically the movie revolves around a MacGuffin.
Yes. And okay, so history lesson time. Alfred Hitchcock concocted this term. An example is in a film he made called Notorious, in where two World War II secret agents need to get plutonium out of a Nazi's house. But plutonium, it could be arsenic. It could be anything. It could be an Illuminati triangle of Zinthar, because it doesn't matter. It's what the characters are obsessing over and what they need to find, but it could be anything, and it's trivial to the audience because all the audience cares is that they obtain the MacGuffin and that they save the day. And that's what a MacGuffin is.
And back anyway. To the show.
Crickets.
So yeah, so they're after this MacGuffin. Her father had given her the instruction of like, you must stop this. It will bring upon the apocalypse.
Yes.
That was her instructions. She had many opportunities to stop the Illuminati from like ever reaching their goals.
Mm-hmm.
If all she had done was just nothing.
True.
The very first temple they visit, right? Like the character played by Daniel Craig is
Alex West.
Good job remembering his name. I don't know. he was going to put the Alex West, like Adam West.
It was just Alex West. It was a basic American bullshit name they could come up with.
All right, so, yeah. So he was trying to solve the puzzle, right? Because he was their Tomb Raider, and he was going to solve it wrong. So if Angelina Jolie's character Lara Croft had just kept her mouth shut, nothing would have happened. They would have had to wait 5,000 years for the planets to align again.
Perhaps this was their way of making her more humane. It's like, oh, she actually wants to see how this goes and all this stuff, or she's just an egocentric little privileged girl. But
I mean, she had like, even if they were trying to give around the fact like she's trying to solve her father's mystery, he explicitly asked her in his one note for her, it's just like,
to destroy, you must stop this. Yeah, stop it, put it to an end. Well, you know, it doesn't make any sense either, because it's like, so one of the pieces of this triangle is in a temple in Cambodia, right? And everybody is in Cambodia. The bad guy, I forgot his name. Alex West and Lara Croft. And Lara Croft pieces out, goes and visits her Buddhist monk friends in Angkor Wat, apparently. And then she calls up this bad guy, and they're talking. It's like, oh, hey, you want to swamp items? Cool. Why are you going to say, oh, hey, we have 66 hours before this thing that only happens every 5,000 years takes place? So let's, you know, get our own private planes and fly from Cambodia to Venice. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Find a halfway point in Cambodia or something, or at least go to Vietnam. Why Venice?
And where did they go after Venice?
I don't even know. Some cold place with husky dogs. Antarctica, to let them.
Probably Siberia.
Yeah, all of this happened in 66 hours. They went from Cambodia to Venice to presumably Antarctica.
Yeah. When I think of Tomb Raider, I think one of the things that comes to mind, I think this movie kind of did capture very well, was kind of this hypersexualized female character.
Mm.
Like I joked before, I just remember her boxy boobies because I remember the developers really focused on trying to give you like that just big boobs and like wide hipped character wearing like skimpy outfits. And when they cast Angelina Jolie, I think they did a good job of like kind of capturing that essence of that original character.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the very final act, you know, when she's running through the temple, you know, I will never forget just her boobs flopping about.
Yeah.
Because they were just flopping. And they were flopping hard.
It's funny because they definitely wanted her to be the female equivalent of Indiana Jones. They were like, when they promoted it, I remember they're like, we really think that there needs to be, you know, equal representation of women, action movie stars and all this stuff. But they totally fell flat.
Wait, do you think in 2001 they were talking about that? Like trying to like...
Well, yeah, because I was obsessed with Angelina Jolie. So I watched like everything I could. And so like they were promoting her as like a badass, you know, like a girl who can hold her own. She's like really strong, like action movie hero chick, and that's what they were going for. And but like, okay, I don't remember in Indiana Jones that super long unnecessary shower scene.
That
showcased his sexuality, like,
or Indiana Jones just walking naked, like, you know, showing his maid is just like the goodies.
I mean, there are definitely scenes where you see like how like he had a six pack and he was really hot and sweaty in that one scene with Marion.
I don't remember.
You never cared for Indiana Jones. No.
In Raiders?
Yeah, in Raiders. Yeah.
I remember that.
There were definitely some scenes where, but like also like, you know, it's more socially acceptable for a man to have a shirt off. Like, you really have to give a woman an excuse to show those parts of her body. So it's like, let's put her in the shower and like over-sexualize her. Right. So it's like, you know, it's those kind of things. And I'm like, oh, okay.
In the movie's defense, though, they also gave another character a hyper-sexualized shower scene.
I will, yes.
And that was Daniel Craig. Like, yeah. That was another shower scene that was like, not, because they gave him like a 2-minute shower scene before like he heard the noise, right?
I think his shower scene was way sexier, and we like the water like dripping on him and everything. Mm-hmm. And then the character of Lara Croft totally sexualizes him before she leaves.
I think she's in the one.
So she has like all the power, yeah. And she like, you know, mocks like, I think she's also alluding to the fact that he has a tiny penis.
She still wanted it.
Yeah, she's like, well, still, but whatever. Something I did not pick up on when I saw it 3 times in the movie theater, but something I picked up on now. Yeah, so, I don't know, movies full of plot holes, over-sexualized scenes, bouncy boobies. Poor British accents. What else about this movie?
We didn't talk about the fact that John Voight, yeah.
The only other thing I would complain about the film, because the film is really choppy and bad and boxy, but is the relationship with the dad. They're way too over-sentimentalized. The relationship between them isn't really thoroughly told. Like, was he also a mentor other than a father? Like, what kind of, like, I know she really misses him and is really weepy, but like, and it's interesting because at that time, Angelina Jolie was estranged from John Voight, so they had their own kind of reunion in real life that was echoed through the film. So that's probably why she was so weepy.
Right. I remember a lot of the media from that time, but they really focused on that John Voight, Angelina Jolie relationship and stuff, and they had a falling out soon after. I want to believe that it's because John Voight asked her, just like, "Can you please stop wearing your boyfriend's blood around your neck?" And she's like, "No, Dad, don't tell me what to do." Because that's what I believe the relationship between John Voight and Angelina Jolie is like. She's a spoiled brat. And he's just like, please stop.
I wonder if that's what it is. Like, I wonder if she went out storming, like, with pounding her feet out the door, if that's what happened or anything. But, I mean,
fucked. Because the movie had a sequel, Cradle of Life. Was he in it?
No, he was not.
He wasn't, yeah. So I guess, like, that.
She got over her daddy issues by then.
So, and the last thing, I guess, so yeah, the sentimental stuff thrown in there, but they also tried to throw in, they crammed in a love story too between Angelina Jolie and Daniel Craig's character.
If you want to call it that, sure.
It was, because like at the end, like she, you know, they were enemies, and up until the end, like when he gets like stabbed and his arm gets crushed in the gear or something, and like she risked her life to save him because, you know, I think she had some intimate feelings for him. And his small penis, apparently.
Yeah. Maybe I love she you felt despite your size. Yeah. Penis, you yeah, know? No, for like, sure.
No, you had it bad in life.
Like, yeah.
I have to rescue you. I'm Lara Croft.
And then they have that weird, like, going back in time moment. Right.
Which was another weird thing. I mean, that whole
another sequence, MacGuffin.
That whole sequence was weird, right? They're running up the pyramid, both of them together, and she's just like,
yeah.
Again, tits bouncing.
Yeah. And yeah. I will say that, like, there were so many times I was watching this movie and I'm like, man, this just looks like a soundstage.
Yeah, that scene particularly most certainly looked like
the opening movie with her versus the robot, and then that, I'm like, whoa, this just like the graphics do not hold up okay.
Which is what a lot of people say about the original Tomb Raider video game.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of appropriate. The thing about this movie that I don't like is that it kind of takes itself seriously. Like, there are parts there, it doesn't have any like time for real sort of logic. It just kind of like throws things at you and it's like, accept it. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun and it's all across the world and all this stuff. But then like with the dad and the seriousness about like the Illuminati and like the world's at risk here, like it just takes itself a little too seriously. So it has that imbalance because it's like, actually, why aren't you throwing more caution to the wind? Why are you trying to give me, like, you providing balance to the amount of seriousness and the amount of kitschiness is bringing me imbalance and I'm not okay with it. And that makes me not like the movie more.
It's so interesting. I never once thought this movie took itself too seriously. I think the movie was just so over the top.
So what did you think of that reunion scene between her and her dad? You were like, oh man, this is really funny.
Campy and like silly. Yeah. Because all the time, it's supposed to be like, she asked him like, where am I? And he's just like, this is the in-between, between life and death or whatever, right?
I think it was trying to be poignant and it failed.
This movie is so fucking stupid. It was just dumb.
I think it's more of the fact that it's just not a very good film.
I think, yeah. But like, I just still think it never really took itself so seriously. Even those scenes, I never thought like they were like, I don't think the director, Simon West, was ever like really trying to make a good film here. I think he was just trying to please fans by giving them some of the iconic imagery that made the game so memorable. Which
He was just trying to give them what they want. Yeah. Right.
Again, Booth bouncing and her with her double
pistol.
The double pistol, I think, is even more iconic for Tomb
Raider. They just wanted to see her kick ass and like we wanted to see her.
And I think they succeeded in that sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what I would have to say. I think there was one good thing that did come out of this movie, though.
What?
It was the song Elevation by U2.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That song, though, was written for their album, All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Oh, so it wasn't an original for the movie?
It wasn't original.
Oh, now I feel let down. They I just thought that did was like, a, what's it called? They did the music video for it.
They did a music video. Yeah. She was in it. Oh, it now was I'm like upset. An alternative version that they also had.
Nothing good came out of this movie then.
My discovering my lesbianism came out of this movie, so that's good. Okay, Rolando doesn't seem to think that me discovering my lesbianism is a good thing. At 13, at least I found it in a safe place, alone in a movie theater. But yeah, so when I was young, I really loved this movie for very particular reasons. And, you know, to this day, I like it for those reasons, but it's a crap movie. Did you like this movie?
I will say this. It's one of the better video game adaptation movies because so many that come out are a lot worse. This one for sure stands out as one of the better ones. And that was until at least the new version of Tomb Raider came out in 2018, which will segue into 2018's Tomb Raider.
What's your name?
Lara.
Surname?
Croft.
Did you notice, Rolando, that Angelina Jolie won Best Supporting Actress and then she got the role of Lara Croft Tomb Raider? Alicia Vikander wins Best Supporting Actress and then wins the role of Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
I have no idea who this woman is. I remember seeing the trailer and then just like Oscar winner, her name.
Alicia Vikander.
And I was just like, Oscar winner. Like, I've never heard, never seen her, never. Who is she? I don't know who she is.
She won. She's very new. She won the Best Supporting Actress for her role in The Danish Girl and she's married to Michael Fassbender.
I never even heard that movie. Wait, she's married to Michael Fassbender? Oh my God.
She was in the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Oh, you guys seen that?
Yeah. No. Which was a remake.
Oh, yeah. No, never seen it. Alicia Vikander is a Oscar winner.
Yes.
I never knew who she was. Still don't.
I just told you who she was.
I know, but like, I never heard of the Danish girl. I didn't know that Michael Fassbender was married.
The movie with
Eddie Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne, yeah. And he plays a person who realizes that they're transgender.
Oh, I've heard the movie. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I don't applaud it for the LGBT community. I mean, in some ways, in very little ways. But like in 2015, like we could have done more.
The trailers made it abundantly clear that she had won an Oscar and now she is the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't know who she was.
Okay.
So go on. You were about to say something. You were saying something.
No, I was just drawing the parallel between the fact that they both won their Oscars for Best Supporting Actress and then the follow-up roles that they do are Lara Croft.
Mm-hmm.
It's always like this weird thing where you win an Oscar and then you do a really shitty action, like a movie
like
that
Halle
makes money. Yeah. Like Halle Berry and Catwoman. Yeah. Yeah. And then
iconic.
Yeah, like after Anne Hathaway won, she did like Bride Wars, I think. Like she's while she's accepting
also,
for Les Mis.
Did she?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Catwoman, the next year she was in Catwoman.
She was another Catwoman, but at least her rendition of Catwoman was not bad.
So, reboot 2018. This only came out as we're recording it. This is fall 2018. And this movie came out in March 2018. So, this is only a couple months old.
Yeah. So, it came out in spring. So, warning, there's going to be spoilers in case you guys haven't seen it because it is fairly recent.
And this also follows the recent reboot of the game, right?
Right. So, the 2018 version of Tomb Raider follows more closely elements of the 2013 reboot of the game. 2018 version of Tomb Raider actually follows the 2013 reboot of the video game.
Yeah.
And in the video game, right, you start off with you're on the island that they visit in the movie. The only elements that are taken from other games, which is like the sequel to the Rise of the Tomb Raider, are the overall corporation that hired, you know, the bad guy in the film.
Yeah.
And even the name of that corporation, which was
Patna. Yeah.
So those were, and even the bad guy himself, right? The main bad guy played by
Walton Goggins.
Yeah. He was a character from the sequel, not the original, not the 2013 reboot. But so they just like kind of took elements from both and kind of made into one movie.
Okay.
And, but the original plot for the 2013 version follows Lara Croft trying to stop
Himiko?
Himiko.
I'm saying it in Spanish. I loved every reincarnation of that.
Himiko.
I'm pretty sure it's
so. It's following the Himiko storyline.
Okay.
Trying to stop the apocalypse from happening from her.
Yeah.
And the major differences in between the movie and the video game are that the movie was actually more grounded in reality than the video games are, because in the video games, it was a supernatural element in it. In this remake, they kind of stick more towards realistic stuff, right? So they end up finding Himiko.
Yeah.
Okay. They end up finding Himiko's tomb, and she's supposed to bring about the Black Death, and it's supposed to be a curse, but it turns out it's really a plague that she just has. She's just a diseased person. Yeah,
poor thing. Right? She actually did something for the better of humankind.
Right. And of course, I think that was an interesting twist, right?
Nice twist. I enjoyed that. Okay, so yeah, so really close to the video game. Mm-hmm. Well, let's compare the movies though, because there's a lot to compare within the differences of representation, right?
Sure.
So starting off with Lara Croft right there. Original movie, she lived in a mansion. We don't need to know how she got it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we know she's rich.
Yeah. We establish a little bit more of a background for this Lara Croft.
Right, because this movie was actually more of a origin story.
Yeah.
So we're learning who Lara Croft is and how does she become this Tomb Raider.
Yes.
It follows Lara Croft. She's having financial troubles because she's in denial of her father's death.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, she has the opportunity to inherit his fortune, but in order to do so, she has to admit to herself that her father is dead.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to
do that. So she's in denial.
So I think right there, they already started building a stronger father-daughter element.
Actually has some depth to her right there. She has an internal struggle going on. She's really only interested in boxing and riding around on her bike with other people. But also, did you pick up on the lesbian hint in the beginning? Yes. Yeah. Eddie's shaking his head. I did. I was like, what?
What? I didn't pick up. What?
After she went for her, she got crammed mm-hmm. by that girl in the boxing ring. She was there with that girl and they looked at each other and there was that moment before they left. I was like, you girls banging?
Oh, really?
You didn't pick up on that?
No, I thought they were I didn't even think anything of it.
Okay.
Sorry. That's not...
Did you tune out again because it's two women, Rolando? No, I mean, I picked up on it. And Eddie doesn't have a mic, but he's over there nodding his head. So he definitely picked up on it, too. Did you see it, Josh, by any chance?
I have not yet.
Okay. Well, I think it was there. So that was really exciting for me, though. Yeah. But anyway...
Because they didn't, in an interesting way, right? As the remake did, they didn't hypersexualize this Lara Croft.
No, they
didn't. So there was no romantic entanglement with her when she's on the island. It's really mm-hmm. just her trying to find her father.
I was about to say that too. Like the rest of the film, she's just
asexual.
One of the boys, mm-hmm. essentially. Yeah. And I hate to use the term one of the boys, but she's not viewed as the sexual target.
Right.
And at the end, kind of jumping to the end, but when Walton Goggins wants to punish her, I'm like, oh my God, please don't rape her. That literally came across my mind, but they didn't go there and I was so happy. And they kept it with yeah, she is one of the boys.
Oh,
I'm sorry, but as a woman, you have to think those things.
That's as a woman, you most certainly do. It's so funny. I didn't think about the rape as a possibility. Now in retrospect, it probably should have been in his MO because 7 years on an island by yourself, of course you're probably going to rape the first. I'm surprised you didn't rape her before.
Yeah, I actually maybe when she was passed out.
I'm surprised she didn't wake up and he's on top of her.
Yeah, right.
They
yeah.
could have easily gone that route.
That was, very much was in my head. I'm like, I'm surprised. As a woman watcher, I'm anticipating some sort of sexualization that's supposed to be happening to mm-hmm. her. So I was happy in the sense that it didn't happen. But that's reality of women representation. So the fact that it didn't really go there and then in the very beginning it hinted at maybe a lesbian thing and depiction of women were actually fucking kudos to them in the way that they depict women. I mean, two boxing women in the beginning and then a powerful businesswoman that got Lara Croft to sign over. The representation here is just, it's on point.
So what do you think of the villain in this movie, right? We talked about him. You were afraid that he was going to rape to Lara Croft at one point in the movie.
Yeah. Okay, wait, hold on though. But like, this is super spoiler, but I wish someone was with me, because the moment he picked up the phone, he's like, I found in the entrance, I'm like, oh, he's calling that business girl.
That's so funny. I didn't even think about that.
I immediately, because not, like, you like, put a scene in there, like it was a random arbitrary scene. Uh-huh. He picks up a phone and says something. So I'm like, okay, that's there for a reason. It has to establish that who he's calling is someone that they're going to call to later.
Yeah.
So like, it really happened quick, but I'm like, the only person that there naturally is that woman.
Like, good for you for being able to pick up on that, because the movie for sure is a little predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have seen that coming a mile away, right? Like, yeah. It introduces like strong female character. Of course you're going to set her up to be like later on. She's not going to be a good guy.
And
she's
of course it's going to set it up for a sequel.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to try to make a franchise out of it. So yeah. I should have picked up on that. I actually missed it just because I was enjoying the movie, right? So I wasn't really thinking that much. I wasn't trying to think far ahead. Like, even though the movie itself felt a little predictable, I guess I was like enjoying the film enough where I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy it. And it is what it is. And this, for me, it was a fun twist at the end when, you know, yeah. when it revealed, it's just like, oh, her aunt. I think it's her aunt. Anna? I assumed it was her aunt. Like, I thought it was like her father's sister who was now running the company, but I could be mistaken.
I think, yeah, it's not.
And yeah, when it turned out that she's the bad guy, which is like, oh, this is, I wasn't expecting this.
Possible
and
bad guy.
Fun,
yeah.
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 It was a good little twist.
Yeah, for sure.
But so, but what do you think about Walton Goggins as this bad guy though?
I thought he was, I mean, I think he's a great actor. You don't think so?
I know that I don't think he's a good actor. I just didn't like him necessarily in this role. So I think this bad guy role wasn't my favorite.
It was just, but it was like, you know, like, oh, he hit all the fucking notes of like a bad guy you wouldn't expect from him. Like,
I suppose. It was just,
yeah,
he was a little flat. Like, compared to like how much more I like Lara Croft in this film, I wish she had a better adversary. And now, you know, if this becomes a franchise, for example, I'd be more excited to see what happens with,
well,
like,
too,
Anna.
But for, like, presumably 16 or 17-year-old Lara Croft, like, literally just going on a whim to solve something that, like, her dad hid into her from a puzzle, it's like, this is a perfect adversary for her.
Okay.
Someone who just has, like, power that they abuse and is, like, actually just, like, a henchman for someone else.
Right.
But that didn't really bother me. And I like that she didn't really have a sidekick, like the guy who rode the boat to her. Like, there's a potential sidekick in the future. Mm-hmm. But other than that, he was just, like, sitting pretty, waiting for her to do shit, and she very much did stuff alone. So that was nice.
Yeah, she was calling the shots and stuff.
Yeah.
She was the...
I liked the fact that they had a puzzle, because I did read that about the original game, is that you do puzzles, so there was a puzzle for her to solve.
And there were puzzles in the temple to solve, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know where my dad went.
That's right in the middle of the Devil's Sea.
It will be an adventure.
Death is not an adventure.
There was another twist in the film halfway through where we discover that Lara Croft's father is still alive, right? So this
spoiler, guys,
diverts a lot, to my understanding, from the video games.
Yes.
And from the original Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think of that twist?
In a weird way, I was actually kind of anticipating it.
Okay.
I was a little upset about it, though.
All right. So now,
because
why...
I really wish she did it alone. I didn't think that there needed to be any closure to that whole side story.
Okay, fair. But why do you think you were anticipating it, though? I'm just curious.
Because at the same time, it's like, the way that the movie was going as in an origin story, I think that they needed to provide that sort of conflict. And it's like, oh, surprise, he's still alive. And he was like living abandoned, like a Robinson Crusoe life for the last 7 years.
Right.
And then like, I knew that he was going to die at the end. Like the moment you see him, you know he's going to die at the end.
I agree.
Like, so she has that like last moment of redemption.
Right.
But like, it would have been way better if he was never there in the first place. But whatever, it wasn't going to be that type of movie. Yeah. Like, so you expected it because that's just what comes with it.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because I guess me going into this film, knowing the previous Tomb Raider movie and kind of the video games, I wasn't expecting her father to be alive. So I really thought this was going to be a journey of her own.
Mm-hmm.
When the father came out, it was just like, oh, I didn't feel that. However, I will say, I think they handled her still being front and center, not really depending on her father, because she was the one who solved all the puzzles.
True, but he was still there for the emotional support and like making her realize it, and like someone who prompted her to make these decisions where she couldn't just do it by herself.
Mm-hmm.
If she had done it more by herself, then it would have been truly been a coming of age, like almost like existential, like who am I and why am I here and why am I doing this film? And like Hollywood doesn't have time for that.
No.
So put the father in there, let him serve his purpose, and then kill him off.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Eddie Z wanted to comment real quick.
Just on that point of her the point of her father, I think what it does is it solidifies, or it gives her a meaning and a mission moving forward. Like losing her father under that circumstances and him telling her, giving her that order that she needs to make sure that she destroys this, you know? And that just springboards the fact is that she's going to take on this next step in her life. She's going to take on his torch.
But like him forward. And his like dated 2009 technology telling her that was enough. Like, I don't know why she needed to see him again as like half of the man that he used to be in order for her to continue on, you know? Like, I totally agree with that point where like he was what lifted the story off and the motivation she needed to be the best Lara Croft that she could be. But like, you know, let me just see it on your old Mac in your hidden room and that's enough.
The old Mac.
Oh my God, I was that was actually one of my favorite parts where she goes into that room and it's like, look at all this 2009 technology. It was like so accurate. I was like, I still have that computer and it did come out in 2008.
And it feels so archaic, but it's just like, man, it was only like 10 years ago.
Right? It was like, only 10 years ago.
Seven, I guess. Or
yeah, so I really appreciated that like historical accuracy is. I get why it was there, and it was just the easy way out is all, you know? Like, it could have been done without it, but that's it.
I think the movie, if they had cut out the fatherline storyline, they probably would have saved themselves a half hour.
Yeah.
And it would have been a tighter movie, I think, from an editor's point of view. One of the other things I want to say, though, was, interestingly enough, you know how, like, the original, the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider had, like, a lot of callbacks to the game?
Mm-hmm.
So this one has some callbacks to the new reboot. I think most notably was the ice pick, right? In the final temple where she's like, what's it called? Trying to hang with that ice pick. That's a direct call to like the video games, because the video game actually focuses more on her climbing.
Okay.
Because the original game, she would just do a lot of high jumps. And actually, that's so funny. Actually, now thinking back, like in this movie, there's a lot of her like doing these jumps.
Mm.
You know, they're like these really superhuman jumps, but that's really on par for Lara Croft's character.
Okay.
So that's another good callback. And then the movie ends with her finally getting her two double pistols.
Yes.
Which was a good, I think that was
it
a
had
nice,
two yeah. endings.
It had two endings, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, actually, Alicia Vikander did a lot of her own stunts as
she
well.
Did, yes.
And I really appreciated the humanization, at least in like, I can just picture her in a booth being like, okay, you just, you know, fell off that old World War II plane, making noise like, ugh, like a lot of like hurt. Like the girl is struggling and there's like so much hurt. And in this movie, she has to kill someone.
Yeah, she does have to kill someone.
That was a great scene.
I appreciated that scene very much. And it was a good callback also to her fighting, like in the very beginning of the movie, right? We knew that was going to show up eventually, but like the fact that she has to take down this mercenary probably twice her size.
Yeah,
it was an intense little murder fight because like, you know, he was intimidating.
He was, and it's gross, and it's like dark, and it's and it like tears her apart. Yeah. I mean, she quickly finds her father thereafter, but we kind of forget about it. But like, still, like, oh my gosh, like I just have to kill someone, you know?
Well, I think it's so funny. It's one of the things that does stand out for me was in terms of the sound mix, like a lot of her grunts.
Yeah,
that's like one of the noises that really you hear a lot in this film. Like they don't go out of their way trying to make her superhuman. She's actually very human in this film, and I really, really like that.
Me too.
This adaptation.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Yeah, she had more of like, she was a kid in denial about herself and her life, you know, and then like had an authority problem, went on a whim to solve this puzzle for her dad, pretty much disobeyed him, just like the original Lara Croft. Mm-hmm. Like, sorry, dad, I'm going to do whatever I want.
Right.
And like, you know, but held her own in something that she went way over her head with.
That was a funny thing, right? Like when they reunite for the first time. He's like, but you destroyed the stuff, right? Like, I asked. So she's just like, oh, I didn't, Dad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
He should have just said right there. He's like, you're a disappointment.
Yeah.
you're no daughter of mine.
Yeah, the bond between the two was better fleshed out, especially with the puzzle scenes. Mm-hmm. That was really nice.
Yeah.
And this felt more like Raiders of the Lost Ark, disrupting a tomb and then the consequences it has when you raid a tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Himiko, you know, was just trying to save the world.
Yeah, Himiko actually, you know, they start her off. Oh, that reminds me. So that's one of the things I didn't like about this film.
What?
The exposition right at the very beginning. Like, the movie starts off with, like, the father telling you who Himiko is. And it's just
pretty much.
I kind of started checking out.
No, I didn't care for the exposition right in the beginning. But it also immediately sets up this relationship between her and her dad and whatever. I mean, I didn't care for it either.
I did have a weird grasp of time, because the first flashback you see with her and her father, he's like, I'll be right back, and he gives her that kiss on the head. I thought that I was like confused as to how old Lara Croft is supposed to be because it's been 7 years since its disappearance. I was like, wait a minute, she was like an infant. Like, what is she? She's supposed to be 14? Mm-hmm. Like, this girl's not 14 or 15 or whatever, right? And then there was another flashback a little later on where she's a little older. I'm like, wait, what? Like, that was a little confusing.
It was.
I think the timeline was a little warped and I had no sense of like how old Lara Croft is.
Mm-hmm.
But I could forgive it because overall, true, I think they gave me a pretty fleshed out Lara Croft and I enjoyed. I was in for the ride.
The movie did start off a bit rocky with the boxing. I was like, oh, I don't really care when movies start off with action. And then the bike scene was a bit like...
The bike scene was a little excessive, I think. I agree.
Yeah. Like, I didn't really care for it. But then it caught steam. And I think it... I mean, it was way more plot, writing, overall. It was more of a successful film than the original Tomb Raider was. But like... You know, when the original Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2001 came out, it was a pretty big box office smash enough for it to have a sequel. You know, it got panned by critics, even though Roger Ebert actually really kind of liked it.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did.
Good for you, Roger. He was smitten with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, he probably was like, tits a bouncing. I like that. But how did this film get
So this film received? Did not do very well. It had about 57.5 million. With a budget of $92 million. Yeah, yeesh. It was a flop, which is interesting because this is like a female-led film and we're right off the heels of Wonder Woman. So why do you think this one failed?
Well, didn't it come out in March?
It came out in March.
Is that a bad month for movies to come out in?
Maybe the studio didn't have high hopes for it, which is shocking considering it was actually a pretty well-done movie.
True. Well, I was also not really aware that this film came out. And granted, I'm not aware of a lot of films that come out unless it's an Avengers or Star Wars movie because those are the movies that they put all of their money into. Mm-hmm. But like, I would have liked to have seen this, like any sort of advertisement for this in my face. And I don't really go to the movies. So like... Okay, shame on me there. Like, if I had gone to the movies, I would have seen a trailer or something. But I think that, you know, people, you really got to get them to the theater. And I guess this wasn't enough.
Yeah. The 57, I'm going to just stop. Clarify. Myself real quick. Yeah. So the 57 is actually domestic. It actually, internationally, actually took in another $216 million.
Oh, that's
so
good.
So it actually, yeah. So it actually might be qualified for. So I guess it has a bigger international audience than a domestic audience. Yeah, I guess it didn't, because you're right. I agree with you. It came and went. Next thing we know, I'm like, we're just like, oh, we should do Lara Croft. Yeah. Like, that movie came out already?
That's exactly what happened. Like, I was like, oh, they're rebooting Tomb Raider. I guess there's still an audience for it. And then I'm like, wait a minute, did that come out?
Yeah.
When you brought it up?
Behold, so. It's out on demand.
But that's also like how fast things are being released and like the climate that we live in. And just like, there's, oh, this week there's this and this week there's that. Oh.
Yeah, because now, I mean, March is about, that seemed like early for like the summer blockbusters, but like you're seeing now because of how Marvel has kind of really taken over the summer.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of studios had to like move their stuff earlier and earlier. So I could see March isn't the best time of month, I would agree. But when you're competing, when you're competing against like the Infinity Wars, which is going to come out like a few weeks after that, like in early May, you know, so it's just like competition's hard.
All right. So do you want to do the quickest lightning round we're ever going to do?
Yeah, no, I have the two that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
All right,
ready? All right, so lightning round.
All right. Well, which dad do you prefer?
Which Richard Croft do I prefer?
Lord Richard Croft.
I think I prefer the John Voight just because he looked more like a dad. He's like Lara and all this stuff. That's my terrible impersonation of him. And after a while, I'm not gonna lie, the dad, when he like went to Himiko's tomb and I mean temple with them, he kind of got on my nerves. It's like, oh my god, shut up. Like, he was just like, don't do this, no, oh my god, you're disrupting it, this is gonna happen. It's like, shut the fuck up.
I do appreciate that they made him a little like kind of crazy, because even like Lara was just like, dad, you're just crazy, stop.
Yeah. You're like, really like
the world's not gonna end, like, let's just dig up this grave, we'll go back home happy.
Yeah. So, like, it was an accurate representation, but at the same time, it was like, shut up.
I agree. No, I'm with you. I think I'm more John Voight only because I think they just dwell too much on the father-daughter relationship in the remake. I just prefer John Voight because you saw him less.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
All right. So then who is your Tomb Raider?
Oh, this is tough. I mean, you know, the Tomb Raider of the 13-year-old Nikki's heart is always going to be Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard because I want to say Angelina Jolie. And I'm probably going to say Angelina Jolie.
but
I think I'm gonna say Angelina Jolie. Okay. I mean, like, I think Alicia Vikander did a great job, and I think that she's a great Lara and a more believable and a way better fleshed out, not one dimensional character. So much to her, and she's also possibly a lesbian, and I am like so for this. I love everything about this Lara Croft, but my heart is saying it's Angelina Jolie, just because it's like what she meant for me in my youth and the realizations of who I was and opening those doors. What about you?
It's a tie for me for Lara Croft.
Mm-hmm.
I think both these actresses embodied the Lara Croft they were supposed to embody. Angelina Jolie just really embodied that hypersexualized Lara Croft from the video game series. Alicia Vikander. I think she really embodied that remake from the game, which is younger, a little more, she's smaller framed, right? More natural looking. And she really embodied that. Plus, they're both beautiful women, right? There's no denying that. But they're also two types of different beauties, right? Angelina Jolie is like this really hypersexualized beauty, where Alicia Vikander was more like a natural beauty, I would argue, right? Like, I think Angelina Jolie looks fake with her lips and her boobs.
But they're real.
That doesn't matter. They look fake.
Wait a minute. I don't think a woman should be scrutinized, though, just because her breasts and her lips look fake.
You're right. She shouldn't be. But like, I'm thinking because of the video games is why I'm thinking of.
But that's how Angelina Jolie is normally built, though. Like, we can't, like, say, well, I don't like her because like her, she looks too much.
That's why
I think they definitely gave her a water bra.
I mean, you have brought up her tits bouncing quite a lot tonight.
Because the film focused so much on it.
And they, well, yeah, they did.
I could do a found footage film on just the frames.
I would watch that film, first of all.
No. I mean, no shame to like Angelina Jolie and her body.
Yeah, okay.
That's her weird Oscar body.
Her weird. Okay, yeah. Now we're moving off this topic. Do you think we needed this reboot?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think I want to make the argument that you kind of, yes, this remake was needed because the Tomb Raider...
It's a reboot.
You're right. It's a reboot was needed only because the Tomb Raider series is going through an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it is appealing to a more broader audience, which I mean like female, because more and more women are playing video games now. I don't think the gaming population would be adjusted to them if like we just had the only representation of Lara Croft being Angelina Jolie's hypersexualized rendition of it. So I think introducing this kind of like younger, this kind of more realistic nature of this movie to younger audiences was needed. I don't know if that's, like I said, I agree with you, it's not a great movie, but for kind of reestablishing this character to like new audiences, I think,
yeah,
we needed it.
I mean, as a non-gamer who doesn't really watch movies of today, and I'm very particular about the way women are represented in film. Mm-hmm. It took me by surprise that there were things that I expected from it that it didn't deliver on in a good way. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, with other stuff that we've recently talked about, we in this country, I feel like we take very slow steps, mm-hmm, and we don't move as fast as we'd like to, or we think we might be able to. I think that it's going to take, sadly, it's really, and I feel like I'm making exceptions for it, but I think it's going to take some time for things like this to really be like number one in the box office. Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's really sad, but it's kind of our reality.
Right.
And I it's devastating that the same old shit and the same old like all male, white male led casts, except for Black Panther and Wonder Woman and the things that make the breakthroughs, like here and there.
Yeah, the exceptions, not the rules.
The exceptions, yeah. But like, they're also the exceptions in the biggest movie franchise right now, which is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So anything outside of that will not even be recognized. And it really sucks because, yeah, it's like, man, I guess the only way we can take progress into equal representation in at least this way are just really glacial baby steps.
Mm-hmm. No, that's
did I answer your question?
I did. And I think that's a very downer note to end this episode on. But
I'm really sad now.
Yeah. Right. Maybe news will brighten us up.
Let's get some news. News. He's got news.
Eddie Z.
So I wanted to announce once again, this is his third revival, The Twilight Zone is going to be hitting CBS at All Access. They're in productions, or they're going to be in productions in a couple of months. Jordan Peele is involved in this. His Monkey Paw Productions, as well as the X-Men movie director, Simon Kinberg.
I'm going to let you take this one, Nicole, because I know you're a huge Twilight Zone fan.
You guys didn't see it, but the moment he said The Twilight Zone, our mouths just opened and stayed open the rest of the time Eddie Z spoke. I am a huge Twilight Zone fan. I think it's probably the best American television show that ever happened.
Mm-hmm. I think you talked about it on the podcast.
I have. Yeah. I love The Twilight Zone. I love Rod Serling. I think that... Anyway, before I go into a rant about that, it's a bittersweet feeling that I have right now. I'm kind of excited because I'm like, oh my God, a revival of The Twilight Zone. I'd love to see what they do. Maybe they could do something that like respects the original but does its own thing. But then I think about the 80s reboot of it and I'm just like, oh man, but what if it's like that?
Wait, wasn't it? I thought it was a 90s reboot.
So they did the movie, which was okay. And then they did the early 2000s thing. Mm-hmm. And then I guess I'm talking more about that too. And now they want to do it now. So I'm like, it's really tough. You really got to do it right. But it could... be done beautifully. And now, I'm so sorry, I know you want to speak, is a great time to present like social commentary episodes, alternative history episodes, fantasies about what if that can like really, you know, open our mind to some of the stuff that's going on in our interpersonal relationships, race, sex, country, you know, like everything. It's just like, it could be a great platform and I hope they don't fuck it up.
So I think that show already exists. And it has for a couple of years now.
Are you talking about Black Mirror?
I'm talking about Black Mirror. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see the competition, I guess. Because Black Mirror has been doing it so well for like the past couple of years. And, you know, they don't release that many episodes. So it's not, you know, you can't compare that, I guess, right? Like,
yeah.
Based on the amount of episodes, I'm sure CBS is going to want to deliver. But I don't know. Oh, so Eddie Z just confirmed. So they're trying to do 10 episodes. Now, I think the only fault in this announcement that Eddie just announced was the fact that it's for CBS Access, All Access.
Oh, true.
It's not
the original was for CBS.
Right, but the CBS All Access you have to pay for separately. It doesn't get streamed it doesn't get streamed on network. So, you know what that means? I'm going to be like torrenting that shit.
And I'm coming over and watching it, just like I did for RuPaul's Drag Race.
And then we could talk about it.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, thank you, Eddie Z. That was actually a really good news.
Thanks. Thanks, Josh, for being on top of the we had really bad so time with recording today. All right. So this was Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. Until next time.
Stay unoriginal.
Yay, you got it.
I got it.
Yay.